How can you increase your income? There are only three ways in which you can increase your income. This just came to me. Someone said something, and I just want to quickly touch on it, and then we're going to go back to look at this. Yeah. How can you increase your income? How can Ryan sell more decals that are going to get stuck in the wall, or Daryl install more gas, or Elna sell more cakes? There are only three ways you can increase your income. No. Yes, but no. There they are. You won't get them. Let me give them to you. Three ways. Only three ways. If you go too broad in life, you can actually not end up doing anything. If you're too theoretical, this is really, really practical. You increase your income by, number one, increasing the number of customers. Okay? If you've got three people buying cakes every Saturday, you increase that to five people buying cakes every Saturday. The number of people you do business with, you increase that. Secondly, is you increase the frequency of their purchases. So this is the number, this is the frequency of your, let's just call it your customers, because it'll keep it customers. You increase the frequency. You help them to buy more often. So instead of buying a cake once a week, they buy a cake once a week, and they buy muffins midweek. You increase the frequency. And the third way is you increase the amount of each purchase, or the value. Okay, and I use the illustration, I think it's Bollywood curry near McDonald's in Commercial Road, or whatever road it is there. What road is it? Durban Road, Patent Road. There's McDonald's, and then there's a curry shop there. Bollywood curries. Hollywood curries, something like that. Hmm? Hollywood. Bollywood curries. Go into that curry shop and stand there for 1 minute and watch that guy upsell. He is a master at upselling. You'll walk in there and you'll say, can I have a bunny chow? And you'll say, sure. Okay, and what drink is it? I've got Coke, Fanta. Not, thank you. Do you think possibly, maybe, you'd like to spend an extra 10 rand on a cool drink? That's what happened. That's where Elna was with her cakes last time we spoke. Elna had an issue with price. Can't charge. I said, are your cakes good? Yes, they are. Get bold and increase the price of your cakes. Increase the amount of each purchase. So he will go, and what cool drink can I get you that? And would you like some ashars? So I went, yeah, I'll have a Coke. And what about some ashars and some chutney? Yeah, that'd be great. I'm going to charge $5 for the ashars and $5 for the chutney. He didn't tell me that. He was doing me a favor. Helping me enjoy my bunny. That is sales. Sales is, I am helping that person make a decision. I'm not taking their money. I'm helping them make a decision. And it's going to be the best decision they made today. If your lens is, I am taking their money and I need their money, you're gone. You are a servant who's taking away the problem of making a decision. I hate shopping with a passion. All my clothes, my wife buys. I've got about a 15-minute clothes shopping window. And then I want to be in a coffee shop with a good book. That's me. So she learns. She feeds me. I go shopping 50 minutes. She waters me. She can get another 15 minutes out of me. And that's my shopping experience done. But we travel to Brazil quite often. When you go to Brazil and you walk into a shop, I can shop in Brazil forever. I just love the experience. The guy will walk up. As you walk in the door, he'll say, "Hey, bom dia!" And I go, "No, English. No, fala português, pouco inglês, por favor." He'll go, "Okay, one moment. Where are you from? One moment." She goes and fetches the guy. Guy walks out and says, "Hey, hey, you want to speak? Always the American accent. You want to speak English? They've all learnt their English in America or American TV programs. And he'll go, what you looking for? And I'll go, some pants. He'll go, you must be a 32. He'll always get it right. They know their products well. He'll get three runners. And he'll go, right, what colored or jeans? I'll go, jeans. He'll go, ching, ching, ching. I'll go, gone. Boom, back they come. There's a clear table, an empty table in front. And they just start flicking these jeans out. What about this one? What about that one? No, no, no. Okay, what? Longer, less? No, less stuff. Less stuff. The runner goes, comes back. Boom, there's the next pair. You leave with a mountain of clothes on this table. A mountain of clothes on the table. They all stand around the table and they all chat and joke while they quickly fold up these jeans because they all folded and put back on the shelf. And the table's clear by the time the next guy comes in. Every shop in Brazil. Now that is a pleasure. You just stand there. The guy holds them around. Not too big. Not that. Hey. And he'll say to Nikki, doesn't he look sexy in that one? Yeah. And there's this whole interaction play. Half of them are gay. They all love it. They're all going, that's beautiful. And they're doing their thing. But it's an experience. It's an experience that makes it pleasurable for me. And what happens? You end up spending more. Because you never thought a pair of brown jeans would look decent on you until this guy convinced you to try it on. And he's got to know your name, and he's playing with the kids, and he's handing out suckers, and it's been an experience. And you end up spending more, and you end up going back or frequent. And you tell your friends about it, and they get more customers. So whatever you're doing, just ask yourself those three questions. How do I add value? That guy at the curry shop adds value to every single person that comes in. He's a brilliant salesman. He's upselling you. How many times have you been to a restaurant? You order your meal. You wait forever to get asked about a coffee. It's just shocking training. My mate's doing training with a large steakhouse chain in South Africa, which I can't mention. And they will sit twice a day with their staff and take them through an upselling coaching session. Twice a day. Into every single restaurant in this chain has got a training room built into the restaurant. All the waiters go into the training room twice a day, get taught an upselling. They are brilliant with their statistics. They'll turn around and go, you sold this, you sold that, you sold this, you need to sell more of this. Chicken wings aren't moving or chicken livers aren't moving. We've got extra stock of this sitting. You guys mentioned stock. This stock is sitting. We're going to discount it, slip it in, yeah, pop. And the guys know exactly what's going on in that restaurant. I chatted to a waiter when I was up in Joburg on business at a Cape Town fish market store. And I said, so what time do you get home? It was quite late. She said, oh, I get home whatever hour. I said, Shane, do you always get the night shift? She says, no, no. I've got a target to sell 13,000 rand a week. And if I don't, they'll give me more shifts in order for me to hit my target. That store has gone, how are we going to increase these things? Mainly this one. Once we got them in, how are we going to increase it? So she's been taught to upsell. She wants to hit a target. Then she gets an incentive. She can choose her shifts better. The top sellers choose the shifts first. They've thought about this. And they're doing extremely well. Cape Town Fish Market is busy. And look at, next time you go to Cape Town Fish Market, look at the number of staff in the store. Unbelievable. I look at this and I go, one of my mates owns a Cape Town Fish Market franchise. They don't have that target. So that's unique to that store, this 13,000 rand business. But I look at the number of staff in the store and I go, how do you possibly sell enough food to pay for all these wages? You sell it. They do. They do. They get the turnover. You noticed towards the end of a typical shift change, so you get your early diners 6 o'clock, and then you get the guys coming in at 7:30 for your second round. You know, generally, they'll either kill the music or turn it up, and they'll put more busy music on to get you out their store. I don't know if you know that, but they do that in restaurants. So they're going to make it uncomfortable and irritate you to get you out, and they'll slow it right down again. And they'll create this peaceful, lingering thing for the second round, for the 7:30 to 8. They are creating control over their customers. They want to increase the frequency. Get those guys out. Get new guys in. Once you've bought your main course, fiddly and your bottle of wine or whatever it is, it's little rats and mice after pudding. You're holding up a table. Get out. We want to bring the next one through. What can you do in your business to increase these things? To keep people longer if you want to, or to get rid of them because you need their place? How do you upsell your product to them? How do you add value? Do you bring samosas on or something else as a parallel stream that can just add that little bit more value? You outsource it to someone else to make, and off you go. Right, those three things, you'll do that through marketing, you'll do that through strategy, changing your music, you'll do that through a number of different ways, and we won't look at that today. I don't think we're going to get there, but we might have a little look at marketing. So let's go to this one. This is the quadrants. And that's you. And this is strengths. And weaknesses. While we are, I'm just throwing little bits and pieces in as we go. It's just the way my brain works. If it comes in, I'd normally pay attention to it. Quick comment on shotguns and rifles. Most people in this quadrant here go hunting with shotguns. Lots of noise, lots of blood, a little bit of meat on the table. Shotgun, guinea fowl, feathers all over the place, and you've got this scrawny little bird left. Shotgun hunting. Take a rifle, find a kudu, kill it dead, you'll have meat for 3 or 4 months. One shot. The shotgun principle is, I do, it is interesting, Elna shook her head when I said samosas. Now she gets big kudos. Is it kudos? What's the word? Big points for that. Kudos for going hunting. Big points for that head shake. I don't do samosas. You see, if I do samosas, bunny chows, cakes, and I've got a mobile cappuccino machine that I could also rent you on the side, and I might even service your machine if you're not going to use my machine, well, shotgun. We're in trouble here. We don't know where to focus. Am I focusing on servicing the machine, on perfecting my samosa and building chili bites, or is it going to be cakes? What am I focusing on? It's just, you're just blasting everything and hoping something dies. Because you need some meat on your table. A rifle says, I'm going to go and sit, and I'm going to go and wait, and I'm going to clap what I clap well. And you might hit 10 buck a day. Who knows? But if you hit 10 guinea fowl a day, you're going to struggle. So the shotgun goes, what am I going to be doing with my business? Sorry, the shotgun goes, I need money. Anything, give it to me. I'll just do anything. And sometimes there's a season for that. There's a time when I came out of the ministry, I had about, Craig knows my journey, I had about 6 businesses I was trying to float at the same time. From a international asset tracking system that's used all over the Australian Navy, tracking every firearm and jacket. I had the rights to that for Africa. What else was there? There was guarding of police stations in southern Natal. There was a tracking of parts coming into the country that we're going to sell, interestingly, of panels onto vehicles that have been pre-approved in Europe. There was a training business that I was trying to float with franchises around, and I was also getting involved in consulting to a bodyguarding company that was going to float a web-based select your bodyguard internationally, so they met you at Johannesburg Airport as you walked through the door and you had his photo and you knew his driving skills and ability to kill people if they try to kill you. All of those I was involved in simultaneously. Trying to float all of them. Scratching, trying to figure out what was going to work. And that was through the 2010. And I was involved in a micro dot company through 2010. And eventually when this business came along, I went to my partners, I was going through, but four of those lasted to the end of 2010, and I took to my these existing partners. And then this one came along, Energy Drive. And we then made a decision. We were running both the asset tracking, the Australian company, and this one parallel. We eventually dropped that and focused exclusively on Energy Drive. But there was a time I was pitching both. I was going to Joburg and I was pitching the tracking of assets as well as the Energy Drive. It's a nightmare. Shotgun world is a nightmare. You don't know where to pay your energies. You'll always drop a plate somewhere because you're running too diverse and you never specialize in anything. So you don't have peace. The shotgun, kill the thing dead. Know its movements, just hunt kudu. A buck comes past, smile and wave. I don't do buck. Refer it to your mate who hunts buck. A kudu is a buck anyway, but a little buck. Impala. If Impala comes past, call your mate who hunts Impala and say, go there. And let him hunt it. And when he sees a kudu, he's going to call you. And you start building up your network. But try and shoot everything, you will actually be in a shambles. Some guys do it well. Some of these importers do it well. You go to some of these Chinese import companies, they just every product on the shelf, from food through to plastic toys through to hair dryers, whatever moves. Yeah, but they're still, their core business is being a shop that sells all those things. And they're a shop owner, even though it's a chaotic shop. Yeah? All right, strengths and weaknesses. So we've got four quadrants in your business. This is now the rifle approach. You are going to install gas. So you go and get qualified to install your gas, and you're now saying, I've been running around here doing the odd thing, cash into my moon bag, out of my moon bag, and I now want to formalize this thing and grow this thing a little bit. So what are your components? Can you guys remember who were here last time? No, don't go to your notes. Remember. Anyone remember the quadrants? Huh? Yeah, my brain works systematically, so I'm going to put financial in here. Yeah, financial, marketing. There we go. Wayno's done this in his MBA. That's why he can remember it. Personnel and? Oh, Craig, you looked. I saw you looking. Okay. Those are your four quadrants. That is all your business is made up of. Nothing will not fit into those quadrants. Almost everything will overlap those quadrants. So Daryl expands his business. He gets a second gang running. He sits with me over a cup of coffee. He says, Mark, I want to get a second gang running. How do I do that? Or why are you getting a second gang? It's an operational decision. A second gang running. Well, it's because my sales have so increased, financial, I can't service everybody. I've got guys backlogged 3 months, so I need to bring on another vehicle. Okay, so you're going to bring on another vehicle, and how many staff are going to be on that vehicle, and what's it going to cost you to pay for the vehicle and your salaries? And how's it going to impact your marketing? Because now, in 1 month's time, you're going to have done everything that normally would have taken you 3 months because of leverage. So how are you going to increase your knowledge out there? What area can you now service? Can you do Durban and Maritzburg at the same time? Therefore, your marketing into Maritzburg must pick up because you've just been focused on Durban. You follow how it works? You just keep kicking it around and kicking it around. What is the impact? If I hit this, someone resigns. What is the impact financially, operationally, and on my marketing? If we bring on a guy with huge skills, how do we increase that and make sure that increases? Do we take a short-term hit here because he's really expensive? The guy we just brought on, do we take a short-term hit here? Or do we delay employing him until we've marketed enough customers that can do with his skill? So let's go to cakes. No, not cakes. Let's go to photography. So you're up and running as a photography business, but now you want to start adding video because that'll be a bad idea. To add video to a photography business would be a bad idea. You're a stills photographer. Yeah. To add video is another completely different ballgame. To edit a wedding video can take 60 hours. 60. What's the average week? 40. a week and a half full time to edit one wedding video. That's a lot of time. Well, I've got a mate who does a wedding every Saturday. He is 4 months behind. 4 months of editing already before he films today. So he's employed a second guy. They both shoot together and they edit all week long together. But it hasn't impacted his marketing yet because this guy can't do it on his own yet. When he can do it on his own, he'll increase his marketing because then he can do two weddings and bring in two guys underneath. But he's going to have to understand the financial implications of that. Are you getting the picture? Yeah? So you're running as a self-employed, you own your camera, you got to let the people in Maritzburg know about you. You can fit it in most mornings, all day, all weekend, depending what your operating hours are and how you're going to do that. And then what's your capacity to shoot and turn around the photos? Got to go through all of those questions. And if you have newborns, do you need a studio? And if you're going to do weddings, you can do it on their site. And you go through all the implications. Pricing, costing. That's an interesting thing about a photographer. Let's go to the video guy. If the video guy is going to take 60 hours, who's got a calculator? If he's going to do 60 hours, can someone do a numbers for me? 60 hours it's going to take him to edit one wedding. And let's say he charges 11 grand for the wedding. What's his hourly rate? 60 plus 12, because he shoots it on the day. 72 hours into 11,000. 11,000 divided by 72? Equals 152. Divided by 2? It's 2 of them. 76 rand an hour before petrol, before gear, before paying off his laptop and all his editing. 72 rand an hour. A computer programmer is sitting around 250 rand. Just sit and just up. That's four times as much. Doesn't work weekends. Four times as much. In 1 month, a computer programmer will earn four times what that wedding guy is going to earn. Working the same amount of hours. So how does he do it? He works 18 to 20 hour days. So right now, he is in that space. And it is just flat out groft. What is he aiming at? As I chatted, he did my sister-in-law's wedding. I chatted to him. He's aiming at being there where he's got three guys underneath him. Then he starts to get the returns. But right now, it's for love, and he is doing what few people are prepared to do. 7 days a week, 18 hours a day, he is working. And you go, 11,000 rand for a video of my wedding. Are you mad? He's making 70 rand an hour. It's a little bit more than an entry-level bookkeeper. Without a question. His sales pitch has to be something like that, without a doubt. So you do the numbers. What is your hourly rate? What I'd do if I was sitting with you is I'd say, what do you need to live? In Durban, you as a family with three kids, you are not going to be able to stay in a house, pay for your schooling and everything else, less than 35 to 40,000 rand a month minimum income. So you have a house in Durban, pay for your kids, and be living with two cars in Durban. You're in for that. So do round numbers, 22 working days in a month. Take 44,000 rand as an income, divided by 22, 2,000 rand a day in your back pocket after having paid for your business expenses. 2,000 rand a day. Work that out. Now decide what business you're going to go into. Now decide how much is it going to cost you to go and quote on that little 3,000 rand business down in Toti. It's going to take you half a day to get there and back and write up the quote for 3,000 rand. Your profit on it's going to be 500 rand. You're gone. Sorry, I don't do that. Shotgun. I'm coming. I'll come tomorrow. It'll cost you 1,500 rand to do that job. Interesting, eh? You've got to go through this. What do I need and what am I doing with my time? I do it with my gardener. What is my hourly rate to cut the lawn versus his hourly rate to cut the lawn? And I pay him to cut the lawn. Our gardener will wash our car, both our cars and our lawn in one day. We're paying him 140 rand because we want him to at least have 100 rand in his back pocket. He'd work for 100 rand. That's exploitation. I've got to pay him to get to me and get back home, and I want him to have at least 100 rand. And even then, I don't even know how he survives. But supply and demand and economics are there, and that's the way it is. So I said to him, I want you to come out. What does your taxi cost? Two taxis to get to me. So he actually gets 150. We're not going to ask him for 10 rand change when we only got 150 bucks. So we pay him 150 bucks. Our agreement's 140. He gets a 10 rand bonus every day. He works for us once a week. But he's doing both my cars and our garden. What's the opportunity cost of me getting in my car, driving it to a car wash, and sitting there and watch someone else wash my car? I've never done that in my life. I wash my car myself in my garden. But time has become a premium to me. So what is my time? What is my cost? So I am in my business. Don't think I'm drifting here. I've got a business. My time. And I know, but I'm giving you principles. Work it out for yourself. So in my business, being my world, where am I applying my time to? And when can I get someone else to do that to me to leverage my time? So I get two car washes. What's a car wash? 50 bucks. I thought it was. I said to Nikki, 25. She said, you're smoking. 50 rand. Okay. So that's 100 rand. So I'm getting my whole garden done for 40 rand. Come on now. That's good money. It's a good call. That's how you got to think. You've got to go back to what is your hourly rate. Then you've got to say, what am I going to charge to recover my hourly rate? Most people here are actually paying other people so that they can work for them. That's true. Right, there's a model. In your financial, there are three primary things. There's your income statement. There's your cash flow. And there's your balance sheet. Okay? Three primary components. In your marketing, green is just a marketing color. You got the five P's. Price, place, product. Come on. See if you can do it without the notes. People and promotion. At least you got notes. Those two quadrants are the two weakest quadrants of a self-employed individual the whole world around. Why? Because your operations box here is the reason you're in business. This is gas installations. This is baking cakes. This is taking photographs. This is installing energy equipment. This is driving a truck. Whatever it is. That is the reason you're in business. This is the template machine that cuts templates. It's where do I buy the stick of paper from? How do I find the decals that I want? How do we cut it out? What's the all of that is your operations. That's why you decided catering. The lady is catering at the varsity. She knows how to cater. The reason she's going to go and do this is not because she's got a BCom honors degree, but it's because she knows how to cook. That's why she spent so much time learning how to bake. She never went to business school. Because that's your strength. So when you do your strength and your weakness, your strength will always be this. That's why you're doing it. So there's a little old statement that says, stick to the knitting. If you baked, don't go and open up a hardware store. Because then you've got no strengths. If you've been a plumber your whole life, don't go and open an electrical company. Even though you may love working with electricity. and hate the smell of sewage. You've been a plumber. Stick to the knitting. So the guy who gets pushed often jumps across operationally. The guy who gets pushed out of working for Portnet as a plumber will often go and want to start up a restaurant. He's been pushed. He's been given the cash, kicked out. Oh, I love cooking. Let me go start a restaurant. No, you might love cooking. But a restaurant is an operationally intense business. I would hate to be involved in anything to do with hospitality. Totally. Hotels, restaurants, you can have it. I love cooking at home. Love cooking at home creatively. I do. But you can have anything other than that. Nick and I ran a B&B for a while when we were church planners because we had the ability to. God used it miraculously to bail us out. When we were back to the wall, impossible, someone would phone and book a week in advance and put a deposit in. And we, like, our bond was about to bounce that night. That kind of stuff happened over and over again. Phenomenal testimonies and things about that. But we knew nothing about it. We researched it. We got a hold of mates who knew how to do it. And we just copied everything they did. We advertised where they advertised. We priced the same as them. Their overflow came to us. We just hitched ourselves onto their wagon. You can get away with it if it's simple. That was like advertise and take in 500 rand a night or whatever it was for our unit and clean it and iron it and put it back together again. The next one came along. It wasn't rocket science. But don't jump from being a plumber into the hospitality industry as a lifestyle, as a future income base. So that's the reason, that's your strength. And then personnel is a pretty neutral one, because generally it's you and one other. So this gets neglected. So a lot of life coaching, business coaching, goes into how do you keep a team functioning that's gone from here to here? Okay, let me explain this again. This is small and insignificant when you're here. When you go there, it's massively important. How do you set incentives? How do you control conflict? I can tell you a dozen examples of the husband starts, let's leave that alone, I'm talking about the personnel quadrant on there. The husband starts a plumbing business, his best mate comes and starts helping him. His best mate wants to buy in. They end up owning it 50-50. And the next minute, the best mate's wife and his wife are sitting as secretaries in the little plumbing business. And someone borrowed someone's hairbrush or something. No, that was totally bad instruction. Someone asked someone to do something. And they didn't do it. And now we've got two best friend mates, two wives having a go at each other. The whole office, I don't want to come in anymore, but you've got to do the books, and you are doing the purchasing, no, I'm not anymore, and you got a mess, you got a personnel crisis. That happens in this transition. But while you're stuck here, your personnel is almost negligible. You pay your little bit of tax and your UIF, and you do your returns 2-3 times a year, and you just tick along nicely. When it starts getting there, you've now got multi-sites, you've got an office in Joburg, office in Cape Town. Incentivize those managers, fire the wrong guys, hire the right guys. This becomes a major space. And a lot of life coaching is going into conflict resolution, team working, and that kind of stuff in here, in this day and age. There's something I wanted to say on that exact note that's just slipped my mind. Personal growth, can't remember. Anyway, so That increasingly becomes an issue. Please.